on this edition of FedGov Today with Francis Rose, setting standards for data for veterans and filling the wish list from 1 to N. It's Wednesday, January 31st, 2024. Welcome to FedGov Today with Francis Rose. The Department of Defense and civilian agencies will connect with the tech sector at TechNet Emergence, happening March 11th and 12th at the Hyatt Regency in Reston, Virginia. AFSEA International hosts it. You'll meet leaders from the largest federal agencies that are looking for new tech, including artificial intelligence, biotechnology, telecom, cybersecurity of Internet of Things, quantum computing, and a lot more. You can read more about TechNet Emergence and register at fedgovtoday.com/events. The Department of Veterans Affairs lists three items among its highlights for 2023. The Chief Technology Officer Charles Worthington and CIO Kurt Del Bene named VA's Health and Benefits mobile app, improvements to VA.gov, and expanding the online Veterans Legacy Memorial Program as those three items on the latest episode of its Office of Information and Technology's monthly LinkedIn Live series, Talking Tech. After the episode finished recording at VA headquarters recently, I asked Charles Worthington in this exclusive conversation about several of the projects he talked about on that show. You talked about something, a couple of things up there that I thought were really interesting. One was the data population across databases. That's been something that agencies, all agencies, have been trying to figure out for a long time. My takeaway from what you were talking about was a vet applies for benefits, types in his information, and then that information populates wherever else that person goes across VA. Am I hearing you right about that's the nut that you've started to crack?
Yeah, that's right. Our VA profile project is basically that exact idea, that if a veteran tells us their phone number, for example, in one context, whether it's checking into an appointment or applying for a benefit, that we should store that information and save it so that they don't have to call multiple places to update that information. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenging problem. It sounds kind of simple when you say it, but because the way that the VA built all of its systems over many decades, when a lot of these systems were first being implemented, there really was no concept of even the internet or networking. And so these systems developed in a very siloed way. And now, after the fact, we're having to figure out how do we connect them together in a way that none of them are really designed for. So it is an actually kind of a challenging engineering problem, but we've made a lot of good progress. And so now a veteran can log on to VA.gov or go to the mobile app. They can add a mailing address or change their phone number, change their email, and that is going to populate across most VA services.
That's the intent, I imagine, is to roll that out across as broadly across the enterprise as you can.
Yeah, ideally, somebody would be able to make that change one time and have it update everywhere that makes sense, and be able to see, you know, go to VA.gov and look at their profile and see all of the different, you know, pieces of data we have about them and tell us which one is the right one.
How much of that is a commercial solution, and how much of that is something that you had to incorporate for regulatory reasons, privacy reasons, or whatever, something internal to VA?
In this case, this is a custom solution because the job it's doing is so bespoke. It's basically figuring out how to write this transaction into a lot of different types of databases. And so it's a custom software project.
Do you have the option or the opportunity to update those database platforms too, to try to get them onto at least a similar standards, if not one standard, or is that kind of part of the process of fixing the airplane while you're flying it?
Yeah, I would say each of our main systems has a modernization plan of its own, including the idea that we want to focus our development into a relatively limited number of core platforms. And so each of those platforms is going to have a different approach for data storage and data analysis that makes sense to that platform. Mm-hmm. And is going to have a concept of how to integrate with the other platforms when that's needed. And so there's no one single answer to how to do data storage. I think the important thing is making the data accessible easily through common interfaces, so that anytime you need a piece of data, it's relatively straightforward to get that data from a different system.
Another item you talked about was replatforming My Health eVet. What does that look like, and what will that how will that present to the veteran using the system?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully to veterans, they're not going to really notice too much of a difference. It's going to be the same My Healthy Vet that they know and love. It's just going to get an under-the-hood refresh. Some of the features are going to look slightly different. But really, we're basically hoping to, under-the-hood, kind of give it a top-to-bottom refresh where it's going to be using the same underlying platform that is powering our other benefit forms and our features like appointment scheduling, for example. Those same tools will be used now to power those patient portal experiences like messaging your doctor or refilling a prescription. But yeah, by and large, it should feel pretty similar to veterans that are used to My Healthy Vet.
You talked about the workforce here as well, and you said something I thought was really interesting. You said the government has been slow to create roles that make sense to people coming from the private sector.
Right.
Slow doesn't mean no progress. Have you seen progress in that, and what progress would you like to see in order for those roles to make sense to somebody that maybe is coming from Silicon Valley or coming from Austin or one of the other hotbeds of technology across the country?
We definitely have seen progress, I think, led by those programs like the Innovation Fellowship Program, which is how I started in government, and the U.S. Digital Service and others. But I think now extending to agencies like mine and CMS as well, what I would like to see is more standardization of that work. I think right now, all of us that are trying to do hiring of roles like product management, engineering management, design, we're basically all tackling the same problem, except from within our own agencies. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an opportunity for us to do this together by having a set of sort of standardized position descriptions. That would be a great benefit, I think, to have a library of these position descriptions that have been developed that map to the modern set of tech roles and that many agencies could use. That also would allow us to do more joint hiring efforts. So there's programs like the Subject Matter Expert Qualification Assessment Process, or called SMEQA sometimes. VA has used that process in collaboration with one other agency. I think that that is the right path, and we could basically do an all of government hiring effort if we had a set of agencies that were all agreed to use a common set of position descriptions. I think we have many of the core pieces we need to do something like that figured out. And really what we need is a focused effort to get agencies to adopt it and to recruit at scale using those approaches.
The end goal sounds very noble. SMEQA might be one of the worst acronyms I've heard in the years I've been in government.
I'm disagree with you on that one.
But that fits with what OPM has talked about recently about sharing pools of applicants for various job openings. So that sounds like that's right in line with what you would like to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happen.
And when you think about how the big tech companies do hiring for these roles, they have a relatively mature leveling type of a concept where across the organization, there's not this explosion of different position descriptions. So even though the work across business units might be quite different, they do have this concept of, you know, hey, there's a way to progress from a junior product manager to a product manager to a principal product manager and up and up. And I think that would be very beneficial to us. When we started doing some of this work at VA, it was almost sometimes like every position had a unique position description written just for it. And obviously there's not a lot of ways to scale hiring in a world where each PD is uniquely written. And to really do this correctly, we need to have not just common PDs, but also a focused recruiting effort to get people to apply to those jobs, which is another thing that I think government sometimes misses. You know, the just posting on USA Jobs and then hoping that some good candidates wind up on the hiring list at the other end of that is not how any sane hiring process would work. But at the same time, you can't do a focused recruiting effort if you're trying to do it one position at a time, which is why I think standardizing would be very beneficial.
Charles, you talked about some of the things that you've accomplished and your team has accomplished in 2023. If we get together a year from now, which I hope we do, and look back at 2024, what would you like to see happen in the interim to be able to talk about a year from now?
Sure. Well, I think that Logging in to VA's digital products is one thing that has to happen for a lot of our transactions, and I think could be better. So we're going to do a lot of work to streamline and standardize the way people log in to VA's websites. So I'm hoping that we could talk about that. I also think that some of those health tools are going to be delivered in a more modern way that are hopefully easier to access, and more of them will be available inside of that mobile app. I think that we could see a continued trajectory of usage of the mobile app compared to web, which I think would be great. You know, I'm glad that we're kind of cannibalizing ourselves with this product, and could conceivably see more of that happening. And then we are sort of in the early stages of really scaling artificial intelligence across the VA. And I think we're going to have a much more mature and standardized governance process, underlying AI infrastructure, as well as a sort of a workforce strategy for both those practitioners of AI, as well as training of the users of some of these AI systems about how they could work. So I'm hoping we'll have a much more thought out and understood way of adopting AI across our enterprise.
One final thought: does the logging in solution, is there something that exists now that you think makes sense to incorporate into what you're doing, or is that something that, again, maybe because of governance or privacy or other reasons, will be something that you need to create?
Well, the way that logging in worked historically at the VA is every core platform built its own way of logging in. And so what that led to was, like, a lot of veterans had multiple passwords for working with the VA. And we have addressed that. So we have made it now possible for a veteran to use whatever credential they had in the old VA to use that to access anything at the VA. So that's good. But it does mean right now we offer a lot of ways to log in, and it's too many ways. It's too many ways for us to maintain, and not all of them meet the modern security standards. And so we want to consolidate the options to a smaller number, and also then that will allow us to streamline some of those modern approaches to logging in, like using pass keys, for example. And we're really excited about doing more in-person identity proofing. So there's some exciting stuff we've got underway in the login space.
The CTO of the VA, Charles Worthington, at VA headquarters, talking about a number of the topics he covered after a recording of the VA OIT LinkedIn Live series, Talking Tech. I'm Francis Rose, the host of FedGov Today. VA CIO Kurt DelBene was the other VA host of the Talking Tech show. After the episode concluded, I asked him where the agency's come from in the 2 years he's been there.
I think we have raised the reliability of the systems we run, which has such a scale effect. When I started, we were having a bunch of issues with some of our key systems. I think with the increased rigor the engineering rigor, I think we've gotten our reliability up to a higher degree, and that just has a multiplying effect. The second thing that I would say, which is related to that, is my goal is to make the entire team stronger from an engineering perspective, because that impacts not just what we're doing now, but what we're doing in the future. That comes down to the rigor we put in place, like every morning at 8 o'clock, relentlessly, we go through every single incident. We talk about root cause. We talk about what we're going to do differently. I think you got to get that muscle memory kind of drilled into the team over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think we with the whole leadership team are very bought into running with a high degree of rigor. And so that'll pay dividends over the long run.
When you were on the TV show, you talked about that concept. Why is that so important? Because you went there first, and you went there first here today, rather than some particular infrastructure thing, moving to the cloud, modernization, the tactile technology stuff.
It's just the thing that has, you could say two things. One, it's the thing that has the greatest leverage, because it changes the way you build everything. To be focused on, I talk a lot about being focused on vision, because you can get so distracted by all the things that you're asked to do. The same thing is, unless you have that focus around engineering rigor, you miss stuff. And you get caught up in the, like, oh, why did we have the same outage that we had a month ago or a week ago? Well, until you diagnose where that outage came from, you're not going to figure out how to fix it systemically. It's also the hardest thing to do. And we look at, like, the incidents caused by change, and, like, it's not moving down as fast as we want. Well, you know, you're talking about 100 different teams, perhaps, that are building all of our systems in aggregate. How do you drive something across the organization that's going to bring that down? So that's, it is the thing that has the greatest leverage. And the other thing is, I'm just an engineering leader from, you know, along many years, and that's kind of how I approach things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the right model. It's as you get to be a more and more senior leader, you cannot lose track of the details. You have to be able to go all the way down to the ground level and to be able to inspire people to do better, to be able to show by example that you understand what engineering rigor means. And so it's kind of natural where I go as well.
From a technology tactical perspective, what are some of the accomplishments in 23, and what do you anticipate being the things that a year from now you'll want to talk about as having accomplished in 2024?
That's a great question. I think we've made progress in EHRM. I think you can look at the statistics in terms of we've moved from one service level agreement or one SLA, so to speak, to having a couple dozen. And they're across the entire dimensions of the experience. I think we still have a long way to go there, because we want to, before we do the restart, we need to be able to assure that we have a very strong experience for caregivers and for patients. But I feel like we've made progress there. Mm-hmm. In this thing we were just talking about of engineering rigor, I feel like we've made progress. We have made a ton of progress in prioritizing all the work that we do, and we now provide even to Congress a one-to-end list of all the stuff we don't have funded. And we take those off the one-to-end list. As we underspend in a particular area, we know exactly what the candidates are for the next thing that we would do. I feel really good about that. That is another piece of engineering rigor. You can't just have the project that's the most fun one to do right now. You have to be focused on the one that has the most impact. And I actually, even if you look across the commercial space, you won't see that kind of engineering rigor uniformly. And I feel like we've really brought that financial rigor to the forefront there. I feel like we are more vision-driven. I think that was really critical with the PACT Act, because we got that additional funding from Congress. We take it very seriously that that is, one, very focused on what the PACT Act is trying to do, and highly leveraged. That means we had a modernization plan for VBMS that we are executing on, that we understand the priorities of, et cetera. I think next year you'll see more of the same. I think it's like rinse, lather, lather, rinse, and repeat. Yes. I always get that sequence wrong. When you set the foundation, it's all about execution. You don't change your ideas and go to something different. And so we're going to continue to kind of relentlessly execute on the way that we're doing it.
Regarding the EHRM, moving from one SLA to several dozen you talked about, what are you doing to try to, that sounds like the potential at least for a lot of complexity to be introduced into that process. What are you doing to try to mitigate that?
No, I actually don't think it adds complexity. I think these are all things that we had the potential to measure, but we're not measuring. And they also are the places that we have the potential to measure and hold Oracle accountable, and we're not doing so before. And it's just, it was the natural part of how contracts are written. You say, what's the core thing we're trying to accomplish? Put an SLA around that. Well, this is a complicated project. And things like, we now have things like not just outage time, but what we call incident-free time. If there's any sort of incident that was caused by the software, that goes against their incident-free time, and it has to be above 95%. Mm-hmm. There's things like end-user response time. We don't just measure end-user response time in the average. We measured it at the 99th percentile as well. That's because the way you get the feedback from people about what they're actually experiencing, the more vocal individuals that are having that bad experience, they're probably part of the 1% of the experience, not the average experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's much more around measuring a broad spectrum of things so we can hold our providers accountable across multiple dimensions.
A lot of discussion about what Oracle can do to be a better partner for VA. What mm-hmm. have you learned in the time that you've been here, that you've been on that project, about what VA can do to be a better partner for them?
Well, there are things we can do. I think, for instance, there's the old adage, if you've seen one VAMC, you've seen one VAMC, VA Medical Center. We have, one of the wonders of VA is they've been able to tailor those experiences to that, what that set of clinicians wants to do in that that geography. At the same time, that introduces a lot of complexity when you're talking about rolling a single system across the entire U.S. Mm-hmm. So we are doing work around trying to standardize our modalities of care as much as humanly possible. There's still going to be a lot of variability. Part of that is the secret sauce of the VA, but part of it can be standardized without having an impact. So that's one of the things we can do. We can also be very concrete, and we are doing this for future rollouts, of what are our criteria to move towards another rollout. And so that's a place where we can say, hey, Oracle, this is what we think we have to meet. Hey, even internally, in terms of our processes of care, this is the standard we have to see before we'll roll out in other places as well.
You talked about the 1-to-N list a few minutes ago, and you talked about it on TV also. What kind of reception has that gotten on the Hill from authorizers and appropriators to at least have some frame of reference as to where you want to go with whatever resources you get from
them? Well, they love it. They were basically saying, we'd like to see your priorities. And we said, what we do in industry as a best practice to me is just 1-to-N. It's a canonical list. You don't get to have 3 priority ones. And so I think it's been very well received by them. They have a lot they want to talk to us about. And so whatever we deliver on, they kind of move on to the next thing, and that's kind of their job. But so they basically said, thank you for doing that. Now let's move on to the next thing that we want to talk to you about. But I think, generally speaking, they were asking for it before. I think this secretary in particular, Secretary McDonough, is all about very high degree of transparency, which I believe in as well. And so there's nothing we won't tell them, which kind of actually, I think, surprises them something. I'm very open about anything they want to hear about. We'll talk to them about it.
VA CIO Kurt DelBene at VA headquarters in D.C. recently. You can read more about VA in today's show notes at fedgovtoday.com. I know you're really busy and you might not catch all the podcasts and TV shows FedGov Today offers you. If you want to keep up with everything that we're putting out, you can follow us on LinkedIn to get the latest updates. You'll get the next FedGov Today podcast coming next Wednesday. Till then, thanks very much for listening.